Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, Happy Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Let's start the week by going up front to get the latest on Wisconsin politics statewide with Channel 12 political director Matt Smith on Point Taken.
And good, happy Monday, everybody. Good morning, happy Monday. Matt Smith is indeed in studio. He was on the road, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, traveling to to this big story that we're going to talk about.
It was here 1 week ago today.
Yes. It was 1 week ago today. The deal was announced.
Yeah, this big tax relief bill that didn't happen.
Because where was the announcement?
Oh gosh, it was like an hour outside of Madison, 45 minutes outside of Madison. Now I'm going to forget the name.
Starts with a B, right?
He was visiting a school. Yeah.
Okay.
Hardest question of the day. You had the governor on up front.
Yeah.
Before we get to some of the clips and some of the conversation, how would you? This is a feeling question. How did he feel to you? Like he took
what
a big loss.
Aura?
He took a big loss.
So this was his first interview since everything fell apart and imploded. Nice. And he wanted to talk. Clearly, he had things to say. If you heard the interview, he had a lot of things to say. He talked a little bit about Tom Tiffany. He talked a lot about Senate Democrats and how all of this unraveled and kind of took us a little bit behind the scenes on as this played out through the week. And then, of course, culminating Wednesday night with it failing in the state Senate. But he talked a lot about the education aspect, the special education funding, and pointed some fingers.
Absolutely.
Do you think there's any chance? I think I asked you this before we started. Any chance at all? Because some of the school board, the big school boards, their leadership has said, can you just come back and do the school piece? Any chance of that?
I don't see it right now. I guess never say never on anything. But like, this was the deal, right? And it failed. And there's been a ton of fallout. I don't know if everyone expected the fallout on all sides, and I think it's going to continue into this week. But as of now, I don't see a scenario where they're back trying to do something else before the election.
Let's hear the governor of the state of Wisconsin, Tony Evers, responding to Matt Smith's question on the failure of this tax relief package.
How could you not get any Democrats in the Senate to vote yes with you?
Because they believe that somehow putting money back into people's pockets that are struggling financially across the state, apparently they don't believe that that's an issue. You know, they're going to say, well, we're going to fix it next time when all these wonderful things happen after Evers is gone and we'll get a new governor and we'll have Democrats all over the place. That's fine. That's a wish list. And who knows whether that's going to happen. But they're impacting kids right now. They're impacting children right now. Bad place for Democrats to be.
Did you ask him at all or press him at all as far as including Democrats or at least even giving them a heads up before the deal was announced?
I didn't ask specifically about a heads up, but I know the governor's office position, and the governor reaffirmed this in the interview, is that part of the deal, he says, and some Senate Republicans will dispute this, he said, we had all 17 votes, we had all Republican votes, we knew we were probably going to have a combination in the Assembly. The Assembly never was a concern, right? But he goes, we had secured, as part of agreeing to the tax rebate portion of this, we were secured that we would have the votes in the Senate, referring to Republican votes, and essentially dismissed early on in the process bringing any Democrats in.
Did you give any thought to having some of the folks on his side of the aisle who were, let's be honest, butthurt about not being talked to about this? Asking them, maybe future episode of Upfront.
Before you say,
part of this is, we have to remember, I separate candidates from people that are actually working on behalf of citizens. So if you're just a candidate but not in the Assembly or whatever, mm-hmm. you're going to have a different look at things, I think.
So you mean you're taking the candidates who are not currently working in the legislature differently than candidates are working in the legislature?
Yes, because I think there's a separation there.
Okay.
So what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take anyone. I'll take anyone at any point.
True facts. Those are facts. There are two different categories.
And I know there are a lot of Democrats responding to what the governor said over the weekend on the show, because, I mean, he's talking about his own party, right? We are months away from the November elections, and he is saying his party is in trouble because of this vote. Whether that's true or not, it's a bold statement coming from the sitting governor.
That's a Christian question.
I mean, you and I were talking about it right before we came on air. I don't know. It will be fascinating to see. Maybe I'll just start doing some of my own conversations with friends of just being like, do you even know that this happened last week, and do it off air and see what I get. But like, I don't know. But the bigger thing that I thought was interesting is when you asked him, being Evers, when it comes to campaigning this fall, he is a popular governor. Which races does he even lend himself to? Do they want him? He said, I don't think they want me.
Yeah.
So it's that bad right now.
He said, I don't think the candidates will want me on the campaign trail. And arguably, he's the most popular politician, according to Marquette, in the state right now.
Well, as demonstrated by two victories. I mean, none of those people have won at that level. He has the victories in his tool belt.
So I don't know if that says something more about the Democratic Party where we sit today, about the candidates. I don't know what that says. Someone smarter than me can tell me. Maybe you, Kristen.
Charles Franklin, where's he? tell us.
Matt Smith, political director at Channel 12, host of Upfronts. Lots more to get to with Matt, including some more from Evers on, back to 2020. It sickens me to have to keep referencing that race, but we'll get to it. And the comments from the governor. Kristen Steeb, Point Taken, Monday edition, 620 WTMJ. All this week on WTMJ, yes, it's Calm Heroes Week. We're honoring our first responders. Point Taken is celebrating Heroes Week every day at 11:35, so hour 15 from now, sharing the stories of the men and women who demonstrate their commitment to our communities and their professions. Incredible stories, incredible people. Throughout the day, you can hear them on some of the other shows as well. You hear the stories, including the one that we're presenting today, a Wauwatosa police officer, outstanding young woman, doing amazing work every day. Salute to Service, presented by Waterstone Bank and sponsored by Mission 94. Thanks to those great partners for making it all possible. Matt Smith in studio, as he always is, most Mondays, except when there's breaking news and he has to go chase down somewhere in, where was it, Western Wisconsin? Is that where you were?
We're still, you know, I had an entire break to find the answer to
find this. Find it on a map, Matt, please. All right. So the governor also had some comments on the Upfront program, which airs on Channel 12 Milwaukee, about the continuing investigations. We have people's homes being, investigated, and all around 2020.
Yeah.
So let's play the clip.
We are adequately prepared, and I won't tell you what pieces are in place, but we're prepared to make sure that our elections happen the way they always do, safely, and so we're going to be...
You're talking about this upcoming November?
Yes.
Plans have been discussed?
Yes, oh, for sure. We have plans to if they show up, we will be there to make sure that they are asking for what they have access to, but also making sure that they're not doing what they shouldn't do.
And by they, you mean the federal government.
Correct.
I mean, that's the fear, right? That somehow people's voting rights are stepped on because of whatever look back or more importantly, or more relevant to what you just talked about, the next election, which matters much when it comes to the makeup of Congress and everything else going forward.
Yeah, and related to these 2020 questions or whatever you want to call it at this point in Wisconsin, the governor dismissed the activity, but at the same time said his office is not aware of any widespread, massive investigation coming from the FBI and the feds. Now, we've seen this trickle of report after report, right? Interviewing different people, whether it's the State Election Commission or folks here in the city of Milwaukee or county of Milwaukee, and what that results in or what the end game is, I don't think anyone necessarily knows big picture at this moment.
So if there's nothing, I don't know, because I don't want you to speculate, because my next question is so is it just veiled intimidation of we're watching you if there's not an actual investigation happening?
One, they're not going to reveal much because you don't want to. And two, probably. That political side of it, we don't want you messing with our elections.
Yeah, and also revealing that the governor quickly segued to this November and wanted to make a point to say plans are in place, conversations are being had about what if.
All right.
There's three of us in a room. I mean, I know you're a journalist, but I think you can still – any of us not expect – this is a turnout question. I would expect this is going to be a very large turnout this fall for all the reasons we've been talking about, whether it's the economy, whether it's some of the stuff with the tax relief bill that didn't happen, just people's generally fearing of the unknown of what could come next. We have raids going on in election individuals' homes. I think there's a lot of people say maybe that will motivate me. Yes, it's a speculative question, but that's what I feel, that we'll see a big increase.
Bigger than 2022?
Yeah.
I think that's probably a fair bet.
Economy stays where it is, absolutely.
As far as what the sentiment was, because 2022 was also right after Roe v. Wade had fallen.
Yes.
Biden, so it was the red wave that wasn't. I don't know. It'd be interesting to go back and look at those numbers and see what we...
Second term presidents, generally in that midterm, never does well. We already got the economy showing no signs of rapid improvement, at least unless I'm missing something. We'll certainly ask Dr. Brian Jacobson that question later. I see signs from an observer perspective and a voter that this could be a massive thing. And if you interject the politics and in the case of the governor speaking to sort of supervision, veiled threats about what happens in and around politics, I think it just antagonizes the public to the point where we're going to show up and just show our force. And maybe that's a good thing. Defend democracy, right? I guess that is a good thing. Look at me arguing defend democracy. How about that? On a Monday, yeah. Jeez, and I had a busy weekend. All right. One more segment with Matt Smith. We'll see what's on his mind for this week, what he's going to look forward to covering, or maybe even not look forward to covering, as the host of Up Frontal on Channel 12, political director Matt Smith. She's Kristen. I'm Steve. Point taken. 620 WTMJ. Welcome back to Point Taken. Not that you went anywhere. Kristen and Steve on this Monday. Now, it was a big weekend for Republicans in the Dells. Where have you heard that? Dells, big gathering. We've heard that story before. But anyway, you had Brian Shinney. Talk about the good gets. Evers, never more relevant than right now, this text thing. And then Brian Shinney, who for a while it was we're kicking him out. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
Cooler heads prevail there? Or what do you think?
Is he feeling safe now?
I think so. At least headed place? Into November.
Yeah. Okay,
he's got.
There have been multiple attempts at this point.
I know. Yeah. Did you like when you ask him about that? Does he kind of just brush it off? Can you?
Yeah.
Sense any animosity from him as far as people not trusting him that he can do this job effectively?
Publicly, he's brushing it off, saying, okay, listen, it's never a majority of Republicans. It's never a majority on the executive committee, which has the ability to get rid of him. So, yes, he goes, yes, these flare up, and then goes into explaining how he, clearly there were a lot of people upset with the results of April, right?
Yeah.
And what that means for November. Concerns about fundraising heading in November and what the ground game looks like, because Republicans know that they have a big hill to climb, just given historically where we are in the midterms.
Well, and is there the same? Because Bill kind of insinuated this on Friday during his, his advice ahead of the convention, and he's like, I know that there's a lot of young energy in our party. I'd assume that was him insinuating that there is still a TPUSA part of the Wisconsin GOP that is younger. And I know for a little while there was kind of a clash happening between the old guard and the young guard. Is that still happening? Have you heard much more on that front?
Well, I mean, I think they're trying to unite it at this point, whether that's going to happen or not, headed into November, and unite the forces in terms of fundraising, in terms of ground game, to be on the same message. Whether the disagreements spill out publicly again, I mean, it's possible. I don't think everything is necessarily hunky-dory.
Okay.
But at the same time, I think there's this urgency for Republicans, especially in Wisconsin. The question is, right, how do you win when Donald Trump and Ron Johnson are not on the ballot statewide, and they need to do that, and they need to get that ground game in effect. And Shimmin says he's confident they're going to.
Yeah, I'll make it easy. Tom Tiffany loses, he's gone. That's it.
Yeah.
It's not hard to figure out. He's had actually a pretty decent run. That's not an easy job, especially in Republicans. We have, MAGAs, then we have the other side. It's like they're not agreeing on everything ever.
And he has the back end of the White House. And I think that's incredibly significant in a state like Wisconsin and in a moment like this, that if you have the backing of the White House and of Trump, then all right, let's put the pause button on.
Yeah, I mean, this goes way back. Bill said his criticism of Shimmin was related to fundraising and finding the money. Yeah. because it costs money to run races.
And you've seen the Tiffany campaign respond to that, essentially saying, we don't care what the state party does. We're going to do our own thing. Yeah. We're going to be fine raising our own money. And whether that's by necessity or not, or by default,
he's also
that's
a congressman
kind of the messaging
right now.
We're hearing as well.
So he has some access to the campaign funds. All right, this week in politics in Wisconsin, what are your eyes on? What are your head thinking about?
Well, I think this follow-up's going to continue a little bit on the tax relief bill failing. And I think all sides have questions to answer on this. Like, everyone is upset or everyone is defending what they did. And whether this resonates with voters more than a couple more news cycles, I don't know yet, right? Like, is this going to become a huge campaign issue when you talk about school funding, when you talk about property tax relief, when you talk about rebate checks? Who's going to take that and try to weaponize votes either way? I don't know, but I think the followed in the short term is still going to seep into this week.
Do you think this is, because I'm trying to think, on its face, because there was bipartisan failure of this, does it come down to individual races where this becomes, did you vote for it, did you not vote for it, in an assembly district, in a Senate district?
In some of these Senate races, I think it could.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see, because some people forget that the governor will be the governor for a while yet, and although they'll be out of session, there's still things that have to happen. And Matt raised the point earlier, as these candidate Democrats are looking, why would you not want the support of the governor? And if I was a governor and you said no to me, you're good. Figure it out on your own. Why would you help someone like that?
Did anyone besides Missy come out as strongly as she did?
No.
She was close.
Yeah. She was the full force. This is a good deal.
Yeah.
And the question politically is, will that help her? Because she's sort of been in the mix of the ones that haven't polled high. Again, for a long time, Joseph Pecci on Fridays has said, someone's got to say something, do something.
Well, it sounds
spend
like
money.
Sarah Rodriguez finally has some. Have you seen any of the ads yet?
The ads for her.
For her, yeah. Yes. Like she finally has a statewide media buy.
Yes, and it's not her campaign. It's a group spending for her.
Okay, because I haven't seen the ad yet.
But yes, this is the first Democrat whose face you're seeing on television after Tom Tiffany has been on for how many weeks now and just is out with his second ad from his campaign.
And she does have a pretty good campaign fund, I think, Sarah Rodriguez.
Well, she has a lot of money from the Lieutenant Governor's Association.
Which you can spend. And because she said the words behind the curtain, interesting, she's criticizing sort of the governor for doing the very things that she mentioned in the
circular firing squad?
What are you talking about?
I'm saying that she was trying to avoid a circular firing squad.
Well, she got what she was
trying
to avoid.
And then this is what it feels like we're going through right now. It's like it was a foreshadow.
You were quoting her?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. So we had two quotes.
I'll let you two hash this one out.
All right. Always great to see you. Always great to see you, Matt Smith. We'll see you next Monday because we're off.
That's
We have local news update.
2 weeks.
Here's the latest from ABC.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. He is Steve Scafidi on this Monday. And I saw this last week, and I was like, if there was ever a Steve Scafidi topic, this
is that what you're,
is it.
Is that what you're thinking?
All right, for the question, start thinking about this now as an audience member, if you're listening right now. How often do you find yourself commenting on your community's Facebook page? So if you live in, if you live in the city of Milwaukee, if you live in Shorewood, if you live in Glendale, like, what do you use your community's Facebook page for, if anything? And if it's nothing, then maybe this won't rile you up as much. But there's a lot of people who do communicate and use that as a forum, even though they are not set up to be forums. And so now there are more and more communities that are disabling the comments on their Facebook page. So Milwaukee Journal Sentinel wrote about this. I think this was last week. And locally, Shorewood is doing this. Mm-hmm. Green Bay has done this. And
Whitewater.
And so more and more places are doing this. And the initial question is that legal? And the short answer is yes. And so they talked to Howard Schwaber, who I've interviewed a couple times. He's a law professor over at UW-Madison. And basically, it's all or nothing. So when it comes to the legal free speech rights online, like, you either need to allow everyone's comments or you need to allow no one's comments. And so if they're disabling comments for everyone, then they're not breaking any laws.
Yeah, there's a couple caveats for obscenity and stuff like that. But generally, that's the case.
And you think about the We talk about how stretched municipalities are right now. They really are not in the position to have someone whose full-time job is to be monitoring Facebook comments.
24/7?
So the question becomes, is this a good thing or a bad thing? And I think you and I are probably on the same page that I think this is a good thing.
I completely agree. As someone who both created a Facebook page, the first one in like this area, mainly related to what happened in 2012, that was an immediate way to get information out quickly to people that weren't getting it somewhere else. So we had to identify that, create the Facebook page, start utilizing the, this is the latest on the shooting, this is what happened, this is what we know, here's real-time information, police department links, all that stuff. But what we quickly noticed, and every community that's sort of deciding to jump in the fray here and to say enough is enough, so much of this becomes a place for trolls, for stupidity, for ridiculous opinions, for nonsense. It's not a free speech issue. Now, you do have to, you obviously have to get rid of it completely or keep it and try to get someone that can monitor it. No one has the firepower to do this or the money to do that anymore.
Well, it's not like, to me, it's like, what did you do before there was Facebook? If you had an issue with a decision that the city was making,
exactly right.
You can call, you can write a letter, you can show up in person. Like, your ease of access to any given post that the city is like making on an official capacity on a Facebook page, just because you would like to leave a comment, doesn't mean there aren't other ways to make your voice heard on a decision that was made.
Yeah, so Kathy asked me a question, my wife Kathy asked me a question last week about a city service. I go, here's the name of the person, just find them on the website, ask them the question, 2 hours later, answer.
Yeah.
That's how it's supposed to work, folks. Every community that I know of has maintained and paid for a pretty slick interaction place on their website to make all these things possible. I don't
think... So like a separate forum?
No,
or
not.
Or you mean a contact page?
Yeah,
like
contact.
This is the person you need, this is their number, this is their email.
I'll even take it away from this. There is a group of people in this country who sow nonsense because they want to troll in comments. We got them on our WTMJ Facebook page. I used to call them out when I had my own show. I used to call them out. Greg, why would you say that? And then I would actually address it. And maybe that was Greg's... And I'm just using
Have you ever confronted any of them?
What do you mean confront?
Either like via DM
no,
or...
No, I never got into that. Because then it escalates. I have had people say that they're...
Going to change hearts and minds one person at a time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, unfortunately, as you know, it's half and half. So you'd be trying to spend a lot of time changing hearts and minds. This may be a moment. I said the war on trolls. I mentioned that before.
Do you think there's a war on trolls?
I think there should be a war on trolls.
I agree. I don't think we're there yet.
No, we're not there yet. But this is one of those starting points. The other one, at some point, we need to ban anonymous commenters. It has to happen. Because too many people, and I said this last week or 2 weeks ago, throwaway line. I got a bunch of emails. This is how I'm safe online. Really? Don't go online if you feel unsafe. There's no right to be online, or on a social media platform, I should say. Feel safe by staying the hell off of it.
I actually don't know that off the top of my head as far as what is the legal, like, as far as, because I think my imagination is going that it's likely just because we have so few rules about social media and online behavior, and there's just been so little regulation that's why. But it is an interesting thing that from the get-go, with whether it was Twitter, Facebook was really at first not as anonymous, but Reddit users, like all these different accounts where you can set up an anonymous account. And the only thing, you know, it is tied to an email address, but there really is no verification that you're a real person.
No, which I hate. Because I often say this. I used to have it on my bio on Twitter, I think. If you're anonymous, never expect a response from me because I don't care. I put my name on mine. You have no name. You could be somebody from Russia for all I know. Or
an actual bot, right?
Like, or an actual bot, yeah.
Like there's the video from, were you here that day? Oh, no, you weren't here. There was a couple weeks back that I had a fairly impassioned speech to Bill and Joe. And I posted that on Instagram. It has like almost 3 million views right now.
Well done.
And well, no, it's not even that. It's largely that there's this one character who is fighting with everyone in the comments. And I look at his profile and I'm like, I don't think you're a real person.
Oh, I see.
Right? And so it's like, and it's a weird thing as far as social media goes. And I think about this with our WTMJ page, right? I've talked to our social media director about this, our digital director about this, as far as this weird incentive as the original poster or the creator to see this nonsense in a comment section and kind of be like, well, the post itself is like doing numbers. Like, it's because, right, it keeps getting pushed out to more and more people, even if like the garbage that's in the comment section is the motivator for that. But you're like, well, do I really want to like shut it down? Because like now it's getting sent to more and more people and it's doing better and better, quote unquote. And so it's a, like this goes into the weird incentive of social media. But like this is the problem with going back to the original topic of so many of these communities, they were having people who don't live there weigh in. People who are bots. And we're going to get this even more as AI gets developed more and more. So again, I think this is a good thing. And I think if you would really like to have conversations about your community, join Nextdoor.
Or just show up at events. So like
you, or all, show up at
every
events.
Every community hosts public events.
But there are. I mean, I'm in a Facebook neighborhood. I'm in a neighborhood Facebook group that's moderated by residents, right? And so it's like there's other ways to express and find online communities that are about the community that you live in. But I think the expectation that your city needs to manage people behaving badly online is unreasonable.
And unrealistic. So if you're one of those communities that hasn't done this yet, would it bother you if your community said, we're shutting down comments? 855-616-1620. After the break, I'll also give you another perspective from the community side on what happens with these comments outside of this conversation. There's a sort of a self-regulation that's been going on for years, and you probably notice it, but I'll give you that information after this on Point Taken. She's Chris and I'm Steve on this Monday. Thanks for joining us. If you missed any or all of our conversation, you can find us at WTMJ.com or just your favorite podcast site. Point Taken is how you find us. Don't forget, 11:35 this morning. After there's not a great stuff between now and then, we tell you who the first of our five honorees for Salute to Service. Thanks to Waterstone Bank and Mission 94 for making that all possible. Great story from Wauwatosa, a big suburb, I think one of the biggest suburbs in Milwaukee, and a great story of a younger police officer who was an absolute treat to meet last week. She has a woman. And she has, if she brings everybody, she'll have the largest group that's ever attended a release of the honoree's name. So looking forward to that clan showing up. All right. So I mentioned, and we'll get to your comments in a second. I mentioned what communities who haven't chosen to ban comments have essentially done. And I've noticed it because I look at Facebook, especially community Facebooks, because
Does Oak Creek still have their comments open?
Yes.
Okay.
But I can tell you, because it was relevant to this conversation, the kinds of posts that the city of Oak Creek does, very limited. So they're essentially all, not all, some of them are already self-editing. Why would you, and one's definition of controversial is, of course, unique to the person, but things like beer gardens were getting crazy comments, because then you get the drunks, the noise, excessive noise, why would we sponsor, like, because it's in a park, it's a nice day, and people want to have fun, and it's Wisconsin, and we like beer, and maybe that'd be the answer. But they're basically have done a modified version, but not on the comment level, on the post level. So you'll see communities, big communities like Oak Creek, maybe post once a day. Here's our upcoming health fair. Unless you're a real knucklehead, you're not going to blow that up with comments, although people try.
Is there any communication around like the Common Council or
other than the meeting time? Other than the meeting time. Here's when our Common Council meeting is. Here's where you can go online to watch the meeting. Boom, done. So they've sort of made it a safe space, not just for the community, because you can't really have too many troll interactions, but also their staff doesn't have to deal, because nobody that I know of in our area has a full-time 24/7 monitoring of their social media.
I mean, at that point, what's the point of even having a Facebook page?
Because there are certain things, especially for emergencies, you have to get out.
Do they have a Twitter as well then?
I think they had a Twitter. I don't know if they still do.
And I agree. I mean, I think that like having a place where people can check real-time information and that information can be shared is a good thing. So I guess if they're still using it for that, great.
Troy from Mount Hora, beautiful place in the state. How do you define trolls? According to the definition I looked up, when I say Trump voters have no morals, that's not trolling, because I'm mean and can defend that. So that's sort of trolling to me, I guess.
Like what
motivates that? So if whatever you think about the other side, why do you think people care about what you think?
Well, I think, and this gets into the psychology of people, and this is taking away bots, but there is a certain psychology of some people who get online who get a dopamine surge
yes.
from fighting with people online.
Absolutely.
I actually was listening to, have we talked much? Do you have a feelings about Graham Platner in Maine?
No.
Okay. No feelings about it.
I love Maine.
Fair. I listened to, he was interviewed for the podcast, The Interview from the New York Times, and I listened to it this weekend. And, you know, part of the oppo that came out on him was when he was a younger man, he spent a lot of time on Reddit, and he said a lot of things. And the way he was talking about it, I was like, exactly that, right? He's like, and he would see, he said it's, poop posting, since I can't say the real word. But it's like you go down there, and in order to try to feel something, you're trying to get a rise out of someone, right? And so I think that, to me, is what I think of when I think of trolling. I think of your own purpose is self-serving, and not even just to make a point or to educate, but into rile another person up so that you can feel something. That, to me, is what a troll is.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that definition. Maybe it's my age. Maybe it's what I've done in my life. I have no use for it. It's not helpful. It's not useful information.
It's also not a good use of time. Like fighting with anyone in a comment section is not a good use of time.
So therefore, even though people take shots at you because you're on the radio.
Yeah, but like we're in a different situation where like we are.
Totally get it.
Like I think there is a one-way direction for us. And there's certain people, maybe I won't engage with anyone who's not a, real person, right? If they don't have their real name, if they don't have an actual picture. But like every once in a while, when I have time, I might engage. But for the most part, it's like we are public figures, right? Like we put things out there for comment and people are allowed to comment. And so like if some of those comments are very mean, then that is part of the job.
Except for obscenity. Because they will
get
removed. Yeah, or threats. Those two things will get you removed from even our Facebook pages. All right, we got to take a quick break here. Kristen, Steve, Monday's version edition. Episode of Point Taken. Headphones on. I'm ready. I had my headphones on, as you do. Oh, you got yours in. Okay,
I got earbuds.
Yeah.
Figure this is a better way for my hair. Do you have the earbuds instead of the?
You should do a fun poll sometimes with like have like five pictures of your different hairstyles. Is that how many you have? Four or five?
Sure.
And then let the newsletter folks vote for which one they
vote
like the
for
best.
Which hairstyle they like best.
Totally, probably sexist and whatever else, but. I mean, you could get some good feedback, right? If you care about that.
But I don't know. Here's the thing. It'd be fun. It'd be funny. I don't know if it's going to change my behavior.
I'm not saying it should
change. Because on a day where it's like...
aren't you curious? Like, what do they think about that? Like, for me, it doesn't matter. It's like, other than shaving my head, that would be the only drastic thing I could do. And nature's doing half of that on its own. So I don't even have to worry about it. All right. Oh, you like that joke. Dr. Brian Jacobson, Annex Wealth Management, Chief Economic Strategist, just like saying that. He will join us in place of Dave Spano, but just as good, sorry, Dave, after the news.
The work week is here. Let's begin with your Monday market preview with Annex Wealth Management Chief Economic Strategist, Dr. Brian Jacobson on Point Taken.
Indeed, indeed. Dr. Brian Jacobson, how are you on this Monday?
Oh, fantastic, all things considered. Thanks.
Fantastic. All right. Well, let's get right to it. We have a new Fed chair. And so we now look to Kevin Warsh as the new Fed chair, but it doesn't mean that Jerome Powell's going anywhere. So when you look at, let's start with Jerome Powell's legacy. So when you look at his economic legacy, what do you think will define his tenure as Fed chair outside, like when we look back at it, maybe not right now.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's where I think it's important to take a step back and be like, okay, when has he been chair, right? So from 2018 until technically the present, he's actually kind of the temporary chair because Kevin Warsh still needs to be sworn in. He's been confirmed. Yeah, he's been confirmed by the Senate, but now there's apparently some paperwork that the White House needs to get done before he gets sworn in. And so from 2018 to the present, right, there's a lot of things that happened. He was there with Trump's first administration because, you know, President Trump is the one who appointed him to be Fed chair. So he had the initial kind of, you know, tariff battle going on then. You then also had during the COVID period of time, you had the high inflation. And so in terms of his legacy, I mean, it has been quite the roller coaster. And part of this is he's not really a trained economist. He is a lawyer and he is a politician, bureaucrat, but he navigated things, I think, given the hand that he was dealt with all the kind of chaos that was going on in the world, he was a consensus builder. And I think that was really maybe his defining legacy, is not necessarily the very visible public stuff in terms of the communication, how often he speaks, but it was more about what was going on inside of that building and around the table where they make decisions, where there was actually quite a bit of consensus. And maybe that's good, maybe that's bad.
I don't know all of the, certainly the chairs of the Fed over the years, but, you know, some names stand out. But as far as, again, the legacy of that job, is it typical to have a conflicted relationship between the chair of the Fed and the president, or if you know?
Oh, sure. Well, it does happen oftentimes. In fact, I think it's pretty famous about how Richard Nixon, some of the tapes that were released about his White House Oval Office conversations, where he would call up or bring in the chair of the Fed at that time and basically tell him, well, I think you know what I want you to do, right? And he would berate him and try to get him to steer the Fed to go in a particular direction. We know that, say, President Bush, the first Bush, he blamed the Fed chair for losing his reelection campaign, right? So it's not unusual to see that type of tension. But I also think that that's a good thing, that we see that there is tension. It shows that the Fed is, but whether they're making a good decision or bad, it does appear as though they're still trying to be independent. They're still trying to base it on the data, their outlook, and not necessarily have it be politically motivated.
So if I'm assuming that Jerome Powell will stay until 2028, I guess there's a chance that he might, but do we know much about his intentions?
Yeah, I think that he will actually end up resigning after the Inspector General of the Federal Reserve completes their review about the, because the Department of Justice, right, there was the lawsuit or the criminal investigation, and now it's been punted over to the Fed's Inspector General. Once they complete their review, then it will probably be settled, and he will be able to ride off into the sunset of retirement.
Okay.
All right, informed speculation will be on your side. Kevin Warsh, will he take the Fed in potentially a new direction? Where do you see him aligning with policy?
He'll probably pivot things a little bit, but it'll take a long time. I don't think he's really going to be able to do anything coming out of the gate, just because the economic conditions don't really justify any sort of move right now. And that could create some pretty quick tension between him and the president. You know, if it was one of the litmus tests was, is he going to cut rates or not? I think the problem is maybe he will eventually, but he won't be able to do it immediately. And the big reason is obviously what's going on in Iran with oil prices. We also have an economy in terms of how resilient it appears to be, even though it's not evenly distributed across all the income distributions, the resilient economy, but the sticky inflation, I don't think is going to be able to justify any sort of rate cut anytime soon.
Well, that's kind of the irony, right? There was so much tension between Powell and Trump for the last 15, 16 months, and now an economic situation that has been created by Trump has made his new guy a little handcuffed in what he's able to do, or should be able to do. Or how do I want to phrase that? The limitations on probably what best practices would be as he gets into the role.
I think you are absolutely correct in terms of if, let's say it was before February 28th, right, then it would have been pretty clear that Warsh was likely going to push and support a rate cut. But a lot of the members were ready to support further rate cuts. But then all of a sudden, you have the war in Iran pushing up oil prices, gasoline prices, diesel prices, possibly food prices as well. Now, all of a sudden, that entire calculus has changed. And so the world that we knew before February 28th is very different than the world that we know right now.
Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economic Strategist at AnnexWealth.com. Speaking of Annex, and Brian's going to stick around for another segment here, two great events coming up on the 21st of May, 6 to 8 p.m. in Brookfield, When Life Changes, How Women Can Financially Prepare for the Unexpected. That's a great one. And in Waukesha, coming up on May 28th, Next Level Travel, Security, Planning, and Dream Building. You know how you find out? Go to AnnexWealth.com, click on the events tab. After the break, more Dr. Brian Jacobson, Stephen Kristen on this Monday edition on 620.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen, he's Steve. We are talking to Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economic Strategist of Annex Wealth Management. And so, as we move into today, affordability, still a buzzword, despite some of the president's comments last week. And so, as you are looking at costs and prices and everything, what do you, because we were mentioning it before, as far as there is a bifurcation, the K economy. And so what are some of the things that we're looking at as even potentially moving the needle beyond the war?
Yeah, I think the upcoming election, affordability, we're going to hear about it a lot. And I do think when we look at where most households are, it might be in a slightly better position than what we can immediately feel, right? In terms of if we just look at some of the bigger picture macro numbers in terms of like debt to income, you know, the ability to continue to service debt, savings rate, it has deteriorated, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's at a bad place, right? So things are good, but they've gotten a little bit worse. And that can feel even worse than what it might actually be. Because when I've been looking at some of the broader metrics, like let's just take, for example, wage growth across the different income categories. So when we see that inflation year over year was about 3.8%, that we have to compare to what happened to people's incomes over that same time period. If you are in the lower income group, like let's say the bottom 20% of Americans, what you saw was your income went up about 3.7%, right? But if inflation was 3.8%, you're falling a little behind. Mm-hmm. Plus, we also have to consider, like, the people who make are in that bottom 20%. A larger percentage of their income is going to filling up the tank, paying for groceries, right? Some of these necessities that have gone up in price. So I think that when we kind of think about we actually have to kind of peel back the economic numbers to look at how different individuals are actually faring. And for, I think, the majority of the population, and who knows how they're going to vote or whether they're going to vote, they do have a strong argument to say that things are not as affordable today, given their incomes, than what they were, you know, a year ago or even, you know, a couple of years ago.
Brian, do we have any idea as far as like the actual numbers? When we talk about the K economy, we talk about there's certain people who are doing fine and there's a lot of people who are not. But do we know any idea as far as like estimates of like what percentage, like where is that break and like how much are in the lower K, how much are in the higher K?
We do, and it really depends upon how precise you want to get with it and how you're defining it, right? If it's based upon your real purchasing power of your income, one of the standard ways that we do it is based upon like 20 percentage point categories, so like the bottom 20% versus the top 20%. There is a distinct difference, right? Bottom 20%, you have a larger number of people who work hourly, and we have seen that the wages, they're growing, but not as fast as they used to be. Plus, the hours worked aren't increasing like they used to be. Right. Now, also their income, or as far as how they spend their money, it does tend to be in those areas where it's been hit harder by inflation. So in terms of that bottom 20%, I think you can say that, yeah, things are less affordable. When you're talking about the top 20%, that's where you have more salaried workers, also people who have money saved in retirement accounts. They're you perhaps have more wealth, maybe they're homeowners as well. And so they've seen their home values go up. They've also seen their stock portfolio go up. So they have that combination of the income growth, but then also what we sometimes refer to as that wealth effect. You know, you see your portfolio go up, you think, oh, yeah, things are going pretty well. So there is a rather stark divide between those two.
Dr. Brian Jacobson from Annex Wealth Management joining us, Chief Economic Strategist. Big meeting in Paris today and tomorrow. Finance ministers from the G7, central bankers, looking at both the sort of the critical piece, the Strait of Hormuz, getting that back open, energy price increases for everything related to that, fertilizer, all that stuff. And maybe even more importantly, bringing that war to an end and all the pressure that puts on the global economy. Where do you think this storyline is going? What are they going to say from that meeting in Paris?
Yeah, at the G7, they haven't really done anything of substance in quite a long time. It really takes a crisis for them to come together and have some sort of joint communication about what sort of action they're going to take. And if we think about just the United States, some parts of it, especially along coastal areas, maybe they're exporting oil, whereas if you look at Europe, they're mostly importing it. And so the cost of this war is actually higher on, say, Europe and Asia than it is on the United States. And that's not quite at that breaking point where I think that would actually bring them together and say that there's going to be some sort of, you know, kumbaya moment where they're going to cooperate. There's probably going to be this a statement around the importance of getting the straits open again, how there maybe needs to be more resilience built in, use more pipelines instead of vessels. So probably just a lot of window dressing and nothing really of substance.
All right, Dr. Brian Jacobson, Annex Wealth Management, Chief Economic Strategist. Always enjoy the conversations. We'll do it again down the line. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, quick break here on Point Taken. Kristen Bry, Steve Scafidi. We got the great, we're going to do it every day this week, 11:30, 11:35, I should say. We're going to meet those great honorees for this year's Salute to Service, thanks to the great folks at Waterstone Bank and Mission 94. We'll walk that up to the bottom of the hour news for you kids, 11:30. That's all next. I read the newsletter this morning because I was so busy this week and I was literally gone for the whole weekend, two weekends in a row. I got so much homework to do, not the fun kind of homework where I'm reading a book or reading something online, like physical work, getting the garden going, getting the greenhouse going, all that stuff.
I have more homework for you at some point, so once you have a moment to breathe, let me know.
I relish that. Good. So if you have not subscribed to the newsletter, first of all, it's free.
It is free.
Yeah, I mean, come
that
on.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and even though I'm part of the show, I actually think it's a great read because there's all kinds of cool stuff. There's some bonus content. We recommend things that aren't often related to what we're doing actually on the show. Sometimes they are.
You recommended Will Flanders this week.
Because Will is a guy. I told Essenberg this when you were off and Rick came in for a full hour. He's one of my favorite guests. Will Flanders is the smartest guy in that building at Will. And he just, the way he processes information, he talks about two things, politics and sports. And he's great at like sort of understanding the infrastructure of those two things from a really high, he's a doctor for Pete's sake. I mean, come on. So he's fun. And I thought he's a great follow on Twitter. And as I put in my note, I'm not calling it the new name. I refuse to call it the new name because that's stupid. Everybody knows it's a Twitter. I'm calling it Twitter. If you don't like it, don't care. So that's my sort of mission statement on that.
Right.
But he's a great follower, and he certainly knows politics. And from his perspective, obviously working for Will. So that was what was your fun recommendation?
My recommendation was, because we got an email over the week, last week from one of our listeners about taxing billionaires. And I think the email was something along the lines of, you know, I'm not saying that they shouldn't pay their fair share, but kind of asking more about how it could work. So I put in two different references. One was for The Atlantic, talking about getting rid of the estate tax altogether and instead bringing in all the things that kind of get written off now as gifts and kind of tax loopholed away and bringing that into income that gets taxed. And then the other one was from the Economic Policy Institute, talking about different actual policies that we could do if we were serious about it.
I'm glad you brought that up because I read that we were both copied on those emails. Thoughtful emails.
Super thoughtful.
Laid out his it was a guy, right? Was
it? I think it was Aaron. I heard it was Aaron.
So
it
could have been both. So laid out the thoughts, what they were talking about, and then we take that information, which is why we relish and recommend that you just talk to us. I put my email out there. She does as well, Kristen. It is the best way to sort of get us to react or respond. And sometimes we take that information and do something else with it, which is why we have the newsletter, sort of a bonus pod in some form or fashion, the newsletter form or fashion. But just all you have to do is text the word extra. No.
Extra.
Yeah, extra.
E-X-T-R-A.
To 855-616. I got a lot on my mind right now. 855-616-1620, and then you will get it sent to your inbox once a week. We don't burden you with a lot of stuff. It's a fun read. I do book recommendations. You do some of the things you do away from the show.
Yep.
I'm doing less of that, but if I have something, I'll let that people can attend. I'll let you know about that as well. And I would imagine that mine will take a gardening tilt.
Oh.
Yeah, so... But I don't do it on the show because that's not for everybody. Although, here's
on
one.
Your outdoor show, it is. Oh, yeah. You talk about gardening on your outdoor show right now.
More than I probably should. And here's a bonus thing. So on June 3rd, through one of our great partners, Capri Communities, Melinda Myers is going to be on this show.
Ooh.
I love that. I'm a fanboy of Melinda.
All right.
She's expert, plant expert. So she's going to join us for the show, obviously related to our partners. So just subscribe, people. It doesn't... If you don't like it, let us know. Tell us why you don't like it. But also, listener feedback is part of the polling
suggestion
that we do.
Box, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to brag or pat ourselves on the back, but who else is doing that stuff? Nobody, including at the station. So, hello. All right. We're going to tease it after the news. Salute to service. Cannot wait to meet our first honoree. All right. On Memorial Day, that's coming up. We take a moment to remember those who gave the ultimate sacrifice. Brave Americans who served shouldn't be denied benefits or have a disability claim incorrectly evaluated by the VA. If you're one of those vets, important, call TABAC for the payback, TABACattorneys.com. I'll give it to you one more time. TABACattorneys, WTMJ.com. Great partner of ours at WTMJ. All right. After the break for news with the fantastically talented Connie Weber, we're going to meet our first honoree for Salute to Service. Thanks to the great folks at Waterstone Bank and Mission 94. She's a police officer from Wauwatosa.
Honoring those who put their lives on the line to serve our communities. This is Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service. Presented by Waterstone Bank and sponsored by Mission 94. Here's Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
All right, here we go. This is the week every year I look forward to, Heroes Week. Thanks again to our great sponsors, Waterstone Bank, Mission 94. And we tell the stories of first responders. Why do I do this? One, it's my background. We had a mass shooting in Oak Creek in 2012, and I got to know a lot of those folks very intimately, and I knew their stories. And I always said, if I ever had the chance, that I wanted to tell those stories, and this is why we do this, one of the reasons we do it. Today's first honoree, met her last week, Jamie Mose, police officer in the city of Wauwatosa. First of all, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Every story is unique, and you'll notice as we go out through the 5 days, they're all different. There's the firefighter who saved 11 kids in one day. I mean, or 11 people in one day. It's just amazing. Here's a story, though. I'm going to put you on the spot. It's one, you're in a male-dominated field. We've got the chief sitting to my left. We'll get to some of that maybe. But you're in a male-dominated field. I'll just ask you one question before we get to our feature that Jazz has put together, producer Jazz. Why this field? Why this job? Why Wauwatosa?
This career is a phenomenal way to give back to the community, help out those who need help, and just keep serving people each day. It's just an honor to work for the city of Wauwatosa.
And you have 4 years on the job, right?
About 2.5 coming up on
3. 2.5, so not even 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Cindy Pasbrig, you're a volunteer for the Wauwatosa Police Department.
Yes.
We're going to hear from you on why you nominated her, but what do you think of Officer Mose?
I think she's great. She's just
can you expand on that?
She's just a caring person.
What made you nominate her, though? I mean, we all know these people. They do great work in our communities. What stood out to you?
When I rode with her on patrol, she was just a genuine, caring person. Just very compassionate. She showed compassion to every person that we dealt with on a stop.
All right, so we're going to play the feature. We have Lieutenant Abby Pavlik, and I assume you're the Officer Moe's direct supervisor.
I'm one of her supervisors.
Okay. We have Chief McGillis sitting next to me. He's looking and seeing what I'm doing as I'm doing my job. And we got extensive family members. We'll do a shout out for those. But we want to listen to the feature. We're going to go right to break, and then we'll come back and have a more expanded conversation. This is the feature that we put together for you, honoring your great work as a first responder in the incredible city of Wauwatosa, right west of us here downtown. Let's listen.
My name is Cindy Pasbrig, and I'm nominated Jamie Mose.
This is Officer Jamie Mose with the Wauwatosa Police Department.
Wauwatosa has a volunteer police reserve program where I volunteer, I do all training, and I can ride along with her when she's on duty.
Lieutenant Abby Pavlik with the Wauwatosa Police Department. Jamie is energetic. She's one of my go-to people when I need something. She is willing to do whatever you ask to do.
I work patrol, and I work second shift, so we're relatively busy. It's a lot of call-taking, but in our free time, traffic stops, writing reports, business checks, PR stops.
She always has good rapport with people on the street.
With little things like lemonade stands. On the nice warm days, it's always my goal to go find one.
She's so compassionate and shows compassion on every call she takes.
She has a good attitude. She likes coming to work every day. She attacks each call with energy and determination to find a good resolution.
Talk about the reasons you got into it and as a woman entering that sort of environment, what you were thinking about.
I mean, one of my main goals is to help and support the community, but I think another one of the reasons was the rise of mental health awareness. I think that's something that society is really looking into now, and I think having more people in policing who can help support that and continue to learn resources about that to give to the community is a benefit. I also think being a woman in this profession, too, brings just a different aspects to helping people on the street. You go to domestics or sexual assaults, and a lot of times there's victims who are looking for a female presence. And sometimes we just have a different outlook on things and can speak to people differently. Sometimes the resolution to everything isn't always the best outcome of what you would want. Sometimes we want people to get help, and that's just people can't choose help until they choose to get help.
When we go to calls and we want the best outcome for people, doesn't always happen. It's either we don't have the resources, they don't want to help themselves. We try to support them in what they're doing. They're the ones that are going to these calls and interacting with people.
Seeing a lot of people on their worst days, and we kind of take pieces of their worst day sometimes with us. You go call to call to call, seeing everything, but you lean on your coworkers, you get through it together. The department always offers resources. Sometimes after big calls, we do debriefs. People can talk about what happened, how they feel. Sometimes just going home and having a supportive family there to listen and there to help is really huge.
I admire her. I always wanted to be a police officer. I couldn't handle the stress every day. I'm exhausted after 6 hours dealing with the negativity and
public reaction.
Yeah.
What does being honored as one of our 5 Citizen Service honorees for 2026 mean to you?
I think it shows that I'm on the right path. I'm doing some good things, but there's always room to grow and keep learning and different ways to support the community. And I think hearing these stories, like you said, help show people sometimes the human side of policing as well, continuing to teach the community and help the community do just as well.
Back to Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service, presented by Waterstone Bank and sponsored by Mission 94.
If you can't tell, I'm always excited this week because a lot of work goes into it. And thanks to producer Jazz for putting all the features together. And we are surrounded by an amazing family and collection of co-workers. Officer Jamie Mullis, Wauwatosa Police Department, Cindy Pasbrig, who nominated the officer, Abby Pavlik, who's one of her supervisors, and sitting to my left, and we'll get to the family members in a second, Chief Jim McGillis from the Wauwatosa Police Department. What do you think about this?
I think it's fabulous, Steve. Thank you for nominating and selecting Jamie. I think she's a shining example of the core values of the Wauwatosa Police Department. Those are courage, respect, integrity, and compassion. I think she also exemplifies what law enforcement looks like going forward. Our younger officers coming on, hiring on, it should give all of us hope that's what policing looks like in the future.
Well, and I guess that's my question is for you, Jamie. Did you always want to be a police officer? I know that I saw here that you majored in criminal justice and psychology. Mm-hmm. A lot of different things you could do with that. But what was the draw to intern at the Wauwatosa Police Department and then choose to work there?
I took a class in high school that dealt with criminal justice that got me onto the path. And then I went to college for criminal justice. And I took a law class that got me interested in the legal side. But when it came time to internships, it's just funny because the Wauwatosa one just fit better for my schedule. So I thought I would go try that one first, and I can always do a law intern later. And showed up to the Wauwatosa Police Department and just had so much fun. And everyone there was so much fun and so nice. And it was my place. It was the fit.
That's such a, how do I want to say this? You don't necessarily put those two things together. Like, police officers are a really intense job. And so the fact that your internship at a police department was described as fun. Tell me more about the fun stuff.
Yeah. I just got to do ride-alongs with different officers on a variety of shifts. So you just got to see so much. And everyone was so willing to help teach me. And they would explain everything they were doing. And then I also got to go to all of our different events, like the Wednesday night concerts that are in Hart Park and everything like that. And just got to see the community, how calls are handled, meet just so many different people, and it was just such a fun summer.
We're going to meet the family here in a second, but Chief, one of the reasons I chose Officer Mose is because I respect people who make a tough decision to go into public safety as a first responder, but representative of the younger segment of that class of people who are willing to step up for us, I mean, speak to that. It's harder and harder to recruit for these positions, and then you get an officer like Jamie Mose.
It is hard, especially with the younger generation, maybe having differing expectations of what policing looks like. My son just got hired about 10 months ago as a police officer in Caledonia. I look at Jamie, I look at the younger group of officers coming in and what they're bringing to the table. And the community, you have to be agile and adaptable to the community needs when it comes to policing. Where law enforcement people mistake that for policing, that's part of policing. Policing is so much more. It's community engagement. It's communicating with people. It's meeting people where they're at. Helping them through tough times when they're at their worst situation where we can shine and be our best.
I want to quickly introduce the crowd here, and one of these individuals is going to speak. Fiance Austin's in the crowd. We have Mom Heidi. There she is. Dad Brian's going to speak in a second. Sister Emily, who looks just like Jamie, sort of, only the younger version. Did you look like that when you were younger? Yes, I would assume
yes.
You did. And Grandma Jean is here. I think I've met Grandma Jean somewhere before. You look familiar. Anyway, Dad, step up to one of these microphones. Dad Brian, you have to be proud of your daughter at a young age accomplishing so much already. I heard she was a great athlete in college, too. Is that true?
I did play soccer.
Yeah, I know you did. What do you think?
I'm actually really proud of her because as a high school teacher, I, you know, am talking to kids about what they're doing after high school and things like that. And so many of them talk about, you know, doctors or things like this, but you rarely hear them talk about things like police officer or things of that nature. So it was very encouraging to hear that she was making her own path, not, you know, going where everybody else is doing things. And I was pretty proud to see that she, you know, was able to be so successful, the way that she balanced everything she did in college with, you know, sports and her classes all at the same time, get out and knew a plan of what she wanted to do.
Yeah, it's got to be an amazing thing. I want to talk to Lieutenant Pavlik real quick because you are a woman working this profession as well, and you've done it for longer than 2.5 years, I'm assuming.
I have.
So, I mean, speak to that as well. This is a hard job.
It is a hard job, and there aren't many females in this profession. So we've had actually an influx in younger females joining the PD. And so that is our next generation for those of us that are on our way out of them coming in and taking over where we started.
All right, Grandma, you don't have to speak, but how proud are you of your granddaughter?
Very proud.
Very proud, she said. How can you not be? All right, I'll give you the last words because you're obviously our first honoree. And thanks again to Waterstone Bank and Mission 94 who step up with us always to make this possible. We asked you in the short feature that we did, but this has to not reward you, but give you a sense you made the right call when you decided to do this job. So speak to what you think your future holds as a police officer in the city of Wauwatosa, beyond the summer fun things you get to do.
I think this is a career path where you can kind of choose where you want to go and where you want to take this. And I think just being 2.5 years in, and this shows I think I'm on the right path and can continue to grow and choose where I want to go next.
For all of you, thanks for being our first honoree. This is the largest number of attendees we've ever had, and I've done it 9 years of attending. So that's a shout-out to your family and to you. Chief, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you.
Lieutenant Pavlik, appreciate you. Cindy Pasburg, thanks for making the nomination. We appreciate that. Thanks to Waterstone Bank, Mission 94, Botana's Restaurant, The Packing House, and the Milwaukee Air and Water Show for giving you things you haven't even received yet. And we have a nice award for you. Thanks to all of you for being our first honoree. Thanks for being here as well. Just one of five stories we're going to share this week. That's why we do it every year. Thanks for joining us for this. Stick around. Got to say goodbye as we celebrate Heroes Week on WTMJ. Fun.
She was an Amazon too.
She's tall.
I'm tall. She was taller. She's like two
she's
or three inches
six
taller
plus,
than me.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Officer Jamie Mosley, we're talking about our first Salute to Service honoree thanks to Mission 94 and Waterstone Bank, great partners of ours that make it all possible. I love the turnout. That is the largest turnout we've ever had in studio, which I wish I could have got everybody on mic because they all had something. We had her fiance here, and obviously her mom, her sister, dad, grandma was here.
It's a cool thing to be honored that early in your career.
It is. I loved her story and the word that struck with me from Cindy's nomination, passion for her job. Not an easy job, but she already has passion for it. And the thing that I was going to ask her a question, we were just running out of time. She mentioned speaking to your constituents, your residents, in a different way. Remember, she's talking about mental health. That's one of the reasons I chose her. Because that's a recognition that when you talk about community-oriented policing, approaching things differently might be part of the solution. And I love that about her nomination and how she addressed it.
Well, and I think they also, Abby made a good point as well, as far as it's a different, especially in domestic violence situations, it's a different perspective to bring on the scene if you were a woman who is having a very, very bad day.
Yeah.
Of being able to talk to another woman versus two armed men.
Yeah, so that perspective was one of the main reasons. Now, I'll tell you right now, every story is completely different from heroic things done in the line of duty. We have a firefighter who, in the course of responding to a call, delivered his first baby, and he's also a younger honoree. The way he approached it was just so amazing. not showing up for a live baby, but here's a baby. It's like, damn, that's, I got to tell that story. So he'll be joining us. We'll do it all week, 11:30 or 11:35 after the bottom of the hour news. And we'll share those stories. Again, thank you, thank you, thank you. Waterstone Bank, Mission 94, Botanas, obviously, Chris Wyken at Packing House, outstanding helper and partner for over the years on this, and the Aaron Water Show from Milwaukee. And the winners get gift certificates to all those. We'll be back tomorrow with another one. Busy show. Stick around for news, then midday right here on 620 WTMJ. Thank you.